very good morning to you. We're with you right through until 12 midday. Comment lines are all open if you want to get through to us. I'm going to give you a chance to win, by the way, yet again today. We had two tickets for you for Thursday night at the Shearwater Hotel in Ballinasloe. excuse me. That hasn't happened in years, where Mike Denver is in concert with special guests Philomena Begley and Brendan Shine at the Shearwater Hotel in Ballinasloe on Thursday, coming the 4th of April. Tickets are on sale now at the hotel reception and at ticketmaster.ie. It's going to be a great night of fun, so it is down there. But when you hear this cue to call, so this is the cue to call that we have, but when you hear it during an interview, during a news bulletin, during an ad break, could be anywhere, between on 12 midday.
Let's call out his name, Tommy K. Tommy K, the DJ.
So, next time you hear that, and it has to be that piece of music that you, from Mike Denver, text us your name. Don't do it now because it won't be counted. So don't do it now, just hang on in there. And we will get to it when we get to it. And if you just text in your name then at that stage, we'll make it work from there. Now, let me go to outgoing TD, indeed, Dennis Nocton, who joins me on the line. And he kindly joins us today because we're looking at, and again, Metairn overnight has said and warned farmers that soil conditions is to worsen amid heavy rain. And to be honest, ground conditions out there, and I was doing a job with some ponies last evening with my brother, and it's not easy. The soil is wet and it's mucky and it's not nice out there, but there'll be no relief from the rain and the sodden ground for farmers. And also we're looking at hedgerows as well, but Dennis joins me on the line today. Dennis, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. Can I start with the hedgerows first? Because I'm really and totally and confused about this. We're looking at climate change. We're looking at hedgerows. And there is a proposal on the table.
It's a piece of research that has been carried out by Chagas, who have been looking at hedgerows around the country. And they have found that there's huge potential in relation to our hedgerows to actually suck in carbon from the atmosphere and lock it into the hedgerows. Now, the difficulty is that, you know, farm practice, particularly in recent years, with rep schemes and so forth, involve cutting back the hedgerows, you know, during the winter period. However, what this research is now showing is that those hedgerows should not be cut back. They should be maintained, allow to a certain extent to grow wild, and as a result of that, lock in more carbon. Now, as you know, this causes challenges on many of our country roads, but also in terms of farming itself. So it is going to be something that Chagas are going to have to look on how you would actually manage these hedgerows to ensure that they don't close in roads and driveways up to farmyards, etc.
But can I ask you, Dennis, a very simple question, and maybe you can just demystify it for me. But how in the name of God can Chagas say, you know, carbon and lock it in? How can they measure that?
Well, that's what they've been doing with this particular piece of research. They've actually taken sections of hedgerow. They have actually analysed the amount of carbon in it, chemically done that, and as a result of that, they can show how much carbon is in a metre of hedgerow and how much can be sucked in from the atmosphere if that is allowed to grow and not be cut back.
And will the department go along with this, or is some of the payments which farmers are getting now as a contingent on doing this work on an annual basis and cutting back hedgerows and that? So will that have to change then as well?
No, this has to go far further afield. It will have to actually go to the United Nations and get agreement there in terms of the research that Chagas has carried out. And in fairness, I have to say that the scientists within the Environmental Protection Agency have been making that argument and are making that argument to the UN scientists. But there is an opportunity here, and this is something that they've taken up with Minister Eamon Ryan and with Minister Charlie McConnellogue. There is an opportunity here where farmers are actually taking in more carbon than they're admitting, to actually have a cash payment transfer to them. Now, it does require a change in how we calculate and measure carbon in our soils and in our hedgerows. That work has now been done in relation to our hedgerows. Sadly, the work has yet to be carried out in relation to our soils, and our colleagues in Northern Ireland are way ahead of us in relation to that. But there is an opportunity there for farmers to actually get a cash payment for the amount of carbon that they're taking out of the atmosphere and locking either into our soils or into our hedgerows. And this is something that needs to be driven by the Department of Agriculture.
But again, it also scientifically needs to be tied down. You're saying that, you know, in a carbon in a metre of hedgerow, that needs to be done again, and needs to be checked, and needs to be confirmed that it's correct, because
absolutely, you know, and this is something that when I was Minister for Climate Change, it was an issue that I discussed with my Scottish counterpart, where they had made a mistake in the calculation of the amount of carbon that was actually being taken into their bogs there, and as a result of that, it caused huge problems for them. But the work has been done on the hedgerows now. That is scientifically robust research carried out by Chagas. We do need to do the similar type of work on our soils so that it does stand up to international scrutiny.
And Chagas are wonderful, don't get me wrong, but you know, we talk about hedgerows, and we half the year we're giving out that they're not cut on the roads around Ireland, and people are ringing us saying this cross and that cross and the other cross, and they're not doing it. Then when they do it, we're told that we're destroying the atmosphere, that we should leave it there to catch and lock in the carbon from there. So it's very difficult, and for such a small island, and we're doing our best to a point, we're doing our best, such a small island. And then you see what the likes of China and all the other major countries are doing, and they're not doing anything to help climate change at all.
No, absolutely. And look, the reality is that the three biggest emitters in the world of carbon into our atmosphere are China, the United States, and food waste. And absolutely, we on this island can only do a very small amount. However, we can actually show how things can be done differently here in Ireland. And as a result of that, these are techniques that can be replicated elsewhere. Mm-hmm. There's also a responsibility on countries in the developed world, particularly in Europe, to lead by example.
Yeah.
The reality is, outside of Ireland, most other European countries and the United States have historically being the big problems in terms of emitting the carbon into the atmosphere that's causing the problems today. So we need to be the global leaders in showing how we can actually turn this around.
Mm. And again,
but there is an opportunity, as I say, for farmers here in Ireland to actually make a cash income as a result of that, if the scientific evidence is robust. And it is now there in relation to hedgerows, and I believe the Department of Agriculture and the Department of the Environment need to act upon that.
Yeah, this caller said there, will you please ask the former minister, what about the hedgerows the wind farms are taking out and putting up turbines from there? You know, this, some of the calls.
Absolutely. And look, this is one of the things that has been done in the Chagas research, is that at the moment, the biggest single problem in terms of the loss of carbon from our hedgerows has been the number of hedgerows that have been taken out around the country. And one of the recommendations in this report is that there should be more incentives to establish new hedgerows around the country, and a responsibility for anyone. And there is a legal responsibility there for people who are taking out hedges to replace them. So I think it does require an overall comprehensive approach now to be taken across government in relation to this, and provide a financial incentive to farmers to support them in a different management plan for our hedgerows.
And can I go to what I was talking about too, about the warning by Met Éireann in relation to the worsening of rain conditions and preventing planting and turning livestock out of sheds as well? It's going to be a difficult couple of weeks for the farming community. Should that be looked at financially as well, to try and give them a bit of a lift on that?
I believe it should, because I think there's a lot of farmers under very serious financial pressure now in getting the additional fodder that they need to keep stock indoors. Like, the land is absolutely saturated at the moment. We did see last year that there was a very tight scheme put in place for people, for farmers within the Shannon Callows, south of the Weir Wall in Athlone. There are many farmers that were left out in South Galway and in South Roscommon. And I think we do need to see a broader scheme to support farmers right across the region who are left in the difficult situation that they cannot let livestock out and they do require a fodder at this stage.
Absolutely. It's something perhaps the Minister for Agriculture should be looking at, I have to say. By the way, have you decided which way you're going to go with the Simon Coveney situation for Taoiseach?
Well, I don't think Simon Coveney will be going.
Sorry,
to Taoiseach.
Simon,
I think
it'll be Simon Harris, excuse me.
I'm meeting Simon Harris later today. One of the issues is a water-related issue that will be taken up with them. It's in relation to Loch Funchina in South Roscommon, where we have six families at the moment under imminent threat of being flooded because of the deluge of rain that we've had, not just this winter, but over the last four or five winters. There is a legal judgment there which has impeded the work by Roscommon County Council to put in an overflow pipe from this particular turlock. But what we do need now is emergency action to take this imminent threat away from those families. And it is something that it will be briefing the potentially incoming Taoiseach on later today. And look, I'll sit down with him today. I'll discuss the various issues and concerns that he has, the issues and concerns that I have, and we'll take it from there.
Would you consider staying with Fine Gael? With Simon Harris as Taoiseach?
Well, Keith, no more than yourself, you've taken a decision
to come up with this.
And I've taken a decision at this stage that, you know, I've given nearly 28 years to public life at this stage. I do want to turn over a new leaf. I do want to try something else. So I haven't any plans to change what I announced on your radio station on the 14th of February last year.
No. And you know what? I'm sticking with my decision as well. I'm very happy with it, and you are too. And to be honest, I hope you got the same goodwill that I've got from people, I have to say. Letters and cards and letters and more cards and all of that. It's quite stunning, and I hope that you're getting them as well.
Yeah, no, in fairness, look, I have had a lot of people that have made contact with me, a lot of people asking me to reconsider my decision. But as I say, I've given nearly 28 years of my life to politics. I want to try new things, and now I believe is the time to do that.
You're still a young fella, and you get one shot now at putting Simon Harris in his box today, so you get what you want. And I have to say that whole area that you're talking about there, like Funchina, it's one of the most beautiful places in the country, so it is, and the family to see their houses so close to being flooded again, it must be very stressful on them. So well done for pioneering that.
And just to say to you, Keith, that if you were to go down there at the moment, it is more like landing on the moon in terms of the decimation, in terms of trees and wildlife and biodiversity as a result of this. It is heartbreaking to see, from an environmental point of view, the devastation that has been caused here and the heartbreak that has been caused to the community and the six families in particular from people who claim to be trying to protect the environment. And that's what's so heartbreaking about all of this. Everyone wants to see this particular unique setting protected, but that can only be protected by protecting the community as well.
All right, Deputy Dennis Nocton, thank you for joining us today on the programme. And good luck with that meeting with Simon today on that one as well. I was just reading something there about Simon Coveney that just came in across the desk as well, so I'll give it to you. I just need to go through it first. Keith, this caller said, Fine Gael boss Simon Harris will meet with the several independent TDs ahead of the Dáil vote to become Taoiseach next Tuesday. And again, confirming that Dennis Nocton, Peter Fitzpatrick and Noel Grealish, Matt Shanahan and Kyle Berry have confirmed they will be meeting with him as well in the coming days. And Noel Grealish said, yes, I will be meeting him before the vote on the 9th. So there's a lot of meetings going on there, so there is, just as we speak. And somebody else was on to us today to say he's not speaking, that is Noel Larkin, he's not speaking on my behalf, this caller said. And another caller said, Denmark had three opt-outs. The opt-out, the policing justice opt-out, and the citizen opt-out, of which the last was being superfluous since the Amsterdam Treaty in 1997. So with a similar population as Ireland, they can restrict numbers coming in. The Lisbon Treaty is Ireland's problem. We should have voted no till we got a similar opt-out, as we're just a small country and half the country at that, the scholar said today. Keith, what about hedgerows? And we just need to leave them there. And Keith, please encourage farmers just to let the hedgerows grow to 10 feet, as cutting them so low destroys all the food and berries for bird life for wintertime. And the exception would be along roadways where they need to be cut for safety reasons. All internal hedgerows should be let grow, but then the department have to allow that as well. Yep.
Galway talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavea Road. A new way to car shop.
Let's call out his name, Tommy K. Tommy K, the DJ.
The Motoring Slot, in association with Colm Quinn BMW Select. The ultimate finance at Colm Quinn. Whatever BMW model you choose, BMW Select has tailored finance available that is just as impressive as your new car. Contact Colm Quinn BMW on 091 753 888.
Now, very good morning to Jerry Murphy. The opposite me this morning. Jerry, morning to you. How are you today?
I'm all right, Keith.
Good. Thanks for joining us today on the programme.
Our last time.
We'll have to get a song, so we will.
Ah, yeah. One more time. Yeah, this is the last time. We'll talk about cars and stuff.
On air, yeah. We'll talk about them off air.
So about that too.
Listen to me. Yeah, we've had a great long number of years at it, so we haven't.
About 20, I think.
20. Maybe 21, yeah. I remember the first time I met you was 91, and I was ringing about the Galway International Rally.
Yes.
And you had a shop in Achnacarra.
I had a shop in Achnacarra just after opening at the time.
Yeah. 91.
The first time there was trouble in Salt Hill after the Galway International Rally.
That's right.
I was in here on the Monday morning making a case for the club. And that was all... Fine and dandy. It was grand. But it happened again the next year, which right. I think was 1990. And
would have been, yeah.
I was roped in again.
We're all jokes.
And it was on the back of that interview that Kevin Dwyer approached me to see would I join the club.
Yeah. He knew you from your tune roots.
He would have been a great friend of my brother Joe.
Yeah.
That would have been around the time of radio station in Tuam one time.
Yeah.
One of these pirate stations.
Yeah.
Joe would have been a DJ.
County Sound.
I don't know. It was a County Sound, was it? Yeah. Well, there you go. So we would have known each other through that as well. They were two great guys for music.
Yeah. And they still are. Come here to me. I saw you driving in today in a remarkable car. I know it's an Audi.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
It's an Audi A6, and I have to say it looks great. Just simply, I think the colour of this, and I don't normally talk about the colour.
Is it electric?
No, this car is a diesel, 100% diesel. It is a sort of the latest version of the Audi A6. A lot of people go for the Audi A4, but there's a cohort of people out there who love Audi A6s because of their size, because of their status and their stability on the road and everything that goes with it. And then you have the whole thing of Audi quality inside it. Superbly put together, very cleverly put together. You have other cars going off doing daft things with technology and trying to fool drivers and things like that. Not the Audi. It's sensible. It's got the right controls in the right places. It's got the right number of switches and controls that don't go through these notorious screens for the operation of the car. So for all those reasons, it's got to be loved. And I like this very, very much. It's a 2-litre turbo supercharged diesel engine in it. Now, people might say, oh, God, diesel and all of that. There is an argument to be made for some of the modern diesels that they're much, much cleaner while running than heretofore. The particulates that come out of diesel engines, they're the ones that cause the heavy pollution in cities and things like that. And the particulates are the ones that are being accused of being a problem for asthma sufferers and things like that. But they're much, much reduced. The price of that car, you would think sitting out there that it would be fairly hefty price.
I haven't Googled anything now, so let me just have a look at it and say 62,740.
Well, the prices start at 58,925. That's the S-Line version out there, which has all the extras in it. The price tops out at 76,845. But when you consider the price of cars and how they're going, what you get for that money in that car seems like really good value to me.
Still a lot of money, Jeff.
It's a lot of money, but
you'll be sick of me. You won't be sick of me, but you're sick of me saying it, because who can afford 76,000?
Well, it's the sign of the times that.
But who can afford it?
Well, obviously there are people who can, and they just spend their money on it, and that's why it's popular. The motor tax on this one is €210 per year, and the fuel consumption. Now listen to this. They claim that the fuel consumption on this would be somewhere between 5.2 and 6 litres per 100 kilometres. I'm getting 6.3. Now that's really, really close to the top end that they say. 6.3 is the average on that over all sorts of driving in the last few days. So, I can't complain about that. I think that's very, very good.
It's a beautiful looking car.
It's a gorgeous car. And yeah. I'm kind of pleased to be in it at the moment.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine many years ago, and he was a Garda driver indeed for ministers, and he loved the Audi. He said from a safety point of view, from getting point A to point B, rushing, all that type of stuff, they'd have to get a minister from X to, he always said the Audi was it.
Yeah, and the build quality of them as well. They can take the rough and tumble as much as they provide you with a lot of luxury.
Now, new car registrations, how are we looking for this year?
Yeah, new car registrations for March are down 16%. Now, in the year-to-date, they're actually up. But I think one of the big issues for new car registrations right now is that the used car registrations for electric vehicles in March compared to 2023, are down 41%. People are turning their backs on EVs as the years go on. Now, there's a number of reasons for this. Some would say that there's fake information out there about them. I would contend that there was a lot of stuff hidden when they came out first that they didn't tell the people about, and some people are finding out about certain things. They are not as... I'm not as against them as you might think. I think they really have a place. First of all, from a green point of view, they have a place. Second of all, if you're living in a city and you're not doing more than a certain amount of mileage per annum, and most of your driving is short commutes to and from work, you can get away with charging it twice a week. Most cars twice a week. But the problem is, once you go outside that environment.
Yeah, but also the, I was reading a very interesting article in the Irish Times, I think it was at the weekend, or the Irish Independent, where an opinion piece where somebody bought an electric car 2 years ago, or going on 3 years ago, and when he went to trade it in, the garage he bought it from didn't want to trade it in.
Yeah, that is a problem.
And when he did find a garage, in 3 years, he had lost 61%.
Yeah, that's
the value.
That is now a problem, because most car companies are dropping the price of their electric vehicles, their new prices. So what that filters down is that the used cars have got to drop an appropriate amount to match that. Mm. So, if 6 months ago you bought, for example, a Volkswagen electric vehicle, and two or three months ago, you were told they were dropping the new price by 10,000, up to 10,000, depending on the car you bought. You'd be a bit peeved off to think that you were after paying 10 grand more 6 months ago than you'll pay today for your car. Mm. Now, that filters down that, and I'm not just talking about Volkswagen alone, because a lot of the car companies have dropped their prices. But what that does is it puts pressure on the second-hand ones that have been traded in. But because there's no marketplace for the traded-in ones, the garages don't want to take them, or are reluctant to take them.
This some major garage said, no, I'm not taking it.
Yeah, people have gone back to the garage they bought cars from, and they've been refused, or they've been offered a price that's annoyingly low.
An insult. Mm. Okay, so new car registration down there. The Kia 48R EV test drive.
Yeah, that's something that was just launched in the last week or so. And it's on the back of people's information on EVs. And Kia are saying, look, if you want to buy an EV, come to us. You can have the car for 48 hours to try it out, do all the tests yourself, and then make up your mind, and your informed mind, rather than just going off a brochure or going off hearsay.
That's a very good idea.
Now, it's a very clever idea, because it's a chance to spend some time in an EV and to test out where you charge it, how you can do it at home, what the return on the mileage will be, etc. And it's interesting, Cathal Keeley is the head of marketing for Kia Ireland, a guy we know well, and he starts his comment by saying there are EV sceptics out there, many of which have never actually driven an electric vehicle. And this is why they're saying, come to us, register with us on kia.com. We'll organise a 48-hour test drive for you with your nearest dealer. And take it from there yourself and measure it and see how you're getting on.
It's a big decision, but I'd say stock-wise, they're going to have to put a lot of stock on the road.
They'll make cars available as they have them. They're not just going to register a heap of cars and start giving them
out. I mean, if you have 10 people in Galway waiting, that's...
Yeah, you will be put on a waiting list.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, Kia and Moore may have three or four electric vehicles there as demos. Mm. So, you know, if there's a group, they'll get them in batches of three or four, or whatever they have available to them.
Mm. All right, Ger. Listen, thank you, David, for that. And again, if you want to get further details, we'll put it up online, so we will from there. And again, your thoughts, by the way, on electric cars and the cost of cars as well. And you can text us to 086 38 33 553. Jerry, talk to you soon. And thank you, David, for all of being there. And we shall talk to you soon. Quick commercial break, and we're back just after these. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motorball. Drive happy in Windsor Motorball, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Yeah, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. The comment lines are all open if you want to get through to us, and you can do so on 091 770 077, and you can also WhatsApp us to 086 38 33 553. I want to go to the Asthma Society of Ireland, because they have a survey which reveals the disruptive effects of hay fever on daily life. Professor Patrick Mitchell is a respiratory consultant and physician at Tally University Hospital and a member of the Asthma Society of Ireland Medical Advisory Group, and he joins me on the line. Professor Mitchell, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me online on this very important topic.
It is very
important. A considerable number of your listeners there.
It's very important. I have family members that suffer very badly with asthma. Thank God I've been spared it from there. But I do find hay fever gets me as well. But from an asthma point of view, is it a huge trigger for patients?
It is a substantial trigger for an awful lot of patients who have underlying asthma, especially allergic asthma, where this time of year, the pollen in the air triggers their asthma. It also can be a significant concern for patients who might not have asthma, but have simple hay fever. And it's largely under-recognized by those who don't that it is a significant medical issue for these individuals. Indeed, it impacts very negatively on their quality of life, but not just their quality of life, their productivity, both in the school place, university, in higher education, and in the workplace.
And again, I mean, from talking to some people and some colleagues of yours, indeed, medical colleagues of yours, they were saying to me that this year the pollen and the hay fever seems to have kicked in at an earlier stage this year. Could that be true?
It seems to have been earlier. Now, it hasn't been as bad as in other years, but we are obviously moving out of the COVID pandemic, where all sorts of strange things, as you well know, were happening, and people were wearing masks much more often, which was obviously protective in terms of inhaling pollen, and they weren't out as much. But we do know that at this time of year, it's kicked off with tree first, followed by grass, and then for those who are affected with mould in the autumnal months.
And can I ask you, just in relation to treatment then, has treatment kept up with the pace of demand?
Treatment has not kept up with the pace of demand, and indeed tackling hay fever can be quite tricky. This is why we have the Asthma Society website and helplines available to patients and individuals who wish to reach out and say, I'm in trouble here and what should I do? Pharmacists, GP and indeed specialists are obviously well placed in terms of the advising and the diagnosis of this, which is usually clinical, but can be aided with skin prick testing. And in terms of, and a very good question, the treatment is really split up into three areas. The first is allergen avoidance and education, and that's actually learning what your triggers are. The second is pharmacotherapy, and that can be antihistamines. It's really important that your listeners know that there are newer generations of antihistamines that don't have the same significant side effect profile, such as the sedating effects of older generations. There are topical sprays, such as into the nose or drops into the eye, which can actually have an antihistamine in them, or a steroid in them, or other agents such as sodium chromoglycate, which is something that stabilizes asthma symptoms and stabilizes allergic symptoms in the nasal sinuses and the eyes. Mm-hmm. The other advanced therapies are immunotherapies. These are actually given in specialist centers and indeed in some GP practices, where patients can actually be introduced to the allergen that they are sensitized to in very small amounts, where it sits under the tongue, or a subcutaneous, that's just under the skin, injection is given. And this retrains the immune system to be less hostile when it actually encounters that allergen in the wild.
Yeah. It can be very discommoding for people. And I've known people that I went to school with, and no, I'm 62, so I'm going back a long way, who suffered very badly from asthma and asthma effect. And they still, to this day, are still on the medication, and they're on inhalers and they're on everything, and nebulizers and everything that you could find. So it's not something that has gone away, and it's not, from what you're saying, the treatment hasn't really, it's moved on, but hasn't changed from there. But it does put people through hell.
It absolutely does. And it's both a personal cost, and indeed there's an economic cost to this. The European Union estimates it spends between 40 and billion per year, both in terms of treatments and economic and school costs of these patients. And two concepts are actually evolving, which your listeners should know about. That's one of absenteeism, where people actually simply can't go into work or can't go into school or college. And the other is presenteeism, and that's where people do actually go into work or college, but they're not functioning as they would had they not had these symptoms.
Yeah.
The other aspect of this is sleep, and sleep can be dramatically impacted negatively by the presence of hay fever symptoms. And we know, and indeed are learning more about how important good sleep is.
Can I ask you some of the questions that are just coming across here? Keith, it's great to hear the professor talking about asthma, and asthma should be talked about more. Could you please ask, is asthma triggered by exercise? And does that cause a
question?
Problem?
A small number of patients actually do have exercise-induced asthma. And that's where we can test for this actually by putting them on a treadmill or putting them on a bicycle and looking for a drop in their lung function. Interestingly, it usually happens towards the latter half of their exercising or even when they've stopped. The treatments have come on in terms of this. And again, it's back to patient awareness, an investigative test, which is usually done in asthma centres, and taking an inhaled therapy about 45 minutes before you actually exercise can help a considerable number of people, but it doesn't eliminate it, and that's the important point.
Mm. I suppose first port of call for people like that should be their GP, and their GP would then take, and if they need to refer to specialists like you, they can do so from there. But I would say that if you have it, go to your GP and get a diagnosis first.
Absolutely. And the other thing is to make sure that you do have it and it's not something else misguiding.
Oh, absolutely. I've been out and about for the last couple of days, indeed, just helping my brother with ponies and that. And I wouldn't physically be doing that type of work very often, to be quite honest. But I do notice, indeed, that the hay fever gets to me, and I do take an antihistamine. And I don't suffer from asthma, but it seems to just affect. So, I mean, it's in the air, it's out there, and one has to be very careful. Does wearing a mask, somebody want to know, save you from getting asthma if the pollen is in the air?
So I suppose there are two parts to the question. It's whether is wearing a mask a good idea or not. A mask, absolutely, such as the ones we were using during the COVID pandemic, can be quite effective in significantly reducing the amount of pollen that you're going to inhale through your nose or your mouth. It might be dissatisfying to some people to have to wear a mask, but I think as a society, we're much more okay with that now. And if you are really badly suffering with this, then it is a very good idea to do this. There are other treatment advices, such as showering actually at the end of the day, as you might have pollen on your body or on your clothes, changing your bed sheets, hoovering, sometimes even placing a small bit of Vaseline inside each nostrils to prevent the pollen from actually entering the back of the nose is a good idea. Mm. Keeping the windows closed when you're driving, checking out MetAaron's pollen count tracker, which is a really good source of information to see when the pollen counts are high.
Can I ask you this? A caller said, is it true that children reared on a farm are less likely to have asthma and hay fever? Would the professor have anything to say on that?
So the answer to that is that there are decreases in epidemiological studies looking at individuals who were born on farms and who live on farms in terms of asthma compared to their urban counterparts. The postulates and unproven postulates are to do with a low level of exposure actually trains your immune system to not be reactive to it, where intermittent high exposures can actually discommode the immune system, leading to an overreaction and sensitization to some of the pollens, etc. So the listener is correct that there is a reduction in the incidence of asthma amongst the farming community compared to the urban communities.
Somebody wants to know, does the pollen / asthma situation cause worse snoring?
It absolutely can. If you're predisposed to snoring, those are pollens and will actually cause inflammation within the sinuses and the back of the airways, which can lead to increases in snoring. So again, this is back to where it can impact on your sleep and your quality of sleep.
Yeah. Now, the typical symptoms of seasonal hay fever, if you don't mind, would be sneezing, I'm told, an itchy, blocked or runny nose, red, itchy, watery eyes, an itchy throat, inner ear or mouth, a post-nasal drip, and a diminished sense of taste and smell, and headaches as well. I mean, there's quite a bit in it, and even one of those is enough to discommode a person.
Absolutely, and they are really debilitating symptoms to have. Again, some listeners who don't have hay fever or don't know someone well who has hay fever might just overlook this and say, look, it's not much to bother someone and get on with it. But it can be extremely discommoding, and a constellation of these symptoms, as you can imagine: sinus pain, sneezing, runny nose, blocked nose, not able to breathe, fatigue, the itchy eyes for several weeks of the year is a really big deal for people.
Somebody has just texted in to say that my husband is a gardener, and can he bring it into our house on his clothes? You mentioned clothes earlier on and having a shower. Could the pollen be brought in on clothing like that?
Yes, it can be. And that's exactly why we're going, you know, and with the Asthma Society on the website there, is to try and push these educational tidbits for people to know that, yes, the pollen can actually be brought in on the clothes. Cat allergy can be brought in on one's clothes to someone else who has a cat allergy, for example.
Really?
Yes, I mean, a lot has been done with cat allergy. It's the second leading cause of allergies after the seasonal ones, such as hay fever, etc. It's released by the sebaceous glands of the cat. We used to think it was actually from the cat licking itself.
Yeah.
And it will stick to you, and it can actually take months to get rid of it from a house once the cat is gone.
Do you know, it's a very interesting field that you're working in, and we had an eminent expert in our past, he's well retired now, and again, he was he really brought asthma to the fore. Indeed, JJ Gilmartin, I'm talking about here, Professor JJ Gilmartin. He's retired now, but it's an interesting field because if you can't breathe properly, Professor, life is very difficult, and life, as you said, it can be diminishing from there.
Absolutely. Asthma and not being able to breathe properly, obviously it's the bread and butter of what I do. This afternoon, for example, in Tallaght University Hospital, I'll be doing a severe asthma clinic where we see patients who are really debilitated and actually dangerously so. And some of these patients are ending up being admitted acutely into our hospitals and worse. Wow. Now, asthma deaths actually did drop from the 1990s with the advent of the dual inhalers. These are the inhaled corticosteroids and LABAs. But it hasn't been cured and it hasn't gone away, and the incidence is climbing. We do have advanced treatments for it, which is fantastic, and some of those patients who have been miserable for years are benefiting from them, but we've a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. Now, if they want to go to the Asthma Society's website, they can get all the information that we're talking about today, and they're a wonderful bunch of people that keep people informed.
Absolutely. It's. I'm delighted to be a part of this, actually, and it really enables me to do my job much more effectively with these patients who are suffering. So thank you for this slot.
I think it's education, really, and that's what we try to do on this program, is educate people. And you're not alone, be it with asthma today, or it could be indeed with bowel issues, or it could be with any medical issue at all. Go to the GP or talk to a friend or just get assistance on it, because you're not alone. And Professor, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for giving us so much of your time as well this morning. And good luck with your with your consultancy this evening, indeed, and I hope that some of those people get a little bit of respite from it as well. Professor Patrick Mitchell there, a respiratory consultant, physician at Tallaght Hospital, joining us there. A lot of calls coming in about this. We could talk forever, but thank you indeed to Professor Mitchell for taking time out of a very busy schedule, you can imagine, Tallaght Hospital and him, and he's just taking time out to talk to us. Keith, this caller said, congratulations to the professor. More needs to be spoken about when it comes to asthma on an ongoing basis. My son and my son-in-law have it, and it's very debilitating for them as well. Keith, I'm 92 years of age and I have had asthma for a long number of years and it has not held me back. I want to thank the professor for the work that he and his colleagues do from there. And other calls coming in too, all about asthma, I have to say, today. Now, let's head towards the Galway BFM news desk for the 11 o'clock news and death notices. And we're back in the next hour. We're looking at financial advice from Dave McCarthy is what we're looking at today on the programme as well. So stay tuned for that. Dave will be joining us shortly on that. And we have much more, including some of your comments from there. We'll be giving you the winner of the tickets to go and see Mike Denver. Stay tuned for that and more to come. And that's tomorrow night in the Shearwater Hotel. And also, we're looking at a wonderful production deed about Oscar Wilde that we're looking at. And we'll be giving you details of a lovely production in the Town Hall Theatre as well after sport today that Oliver Turner is involved in. And he'll give you full details on that. It's on tonight in the Town Hall Theatre. We'll talk about that shortly, though.
Galway talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get a free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.